Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. We're just two aunties sharing our experience through the lens of one Blackfoot woman and one Anishinaabe woman. And we are Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit based in Montana and Arizona. We are 100% Indigenous-led, and this is our podcast. Check us out at indigenousvision.org to learn more about our work, make a donation, or play back any of our radio shows and this episode.
Hello and welcome to the Indigenous Vision Podcast. You are officially listening to episode 103. That is pretty amazing. Thank you for being with us. I know it's been a few weeks. We've been super busy, and I'm so happy to report that not only are we together online here, but we actually met up last week in person for the first time since, oh my gosh, almost a year and a half. How have you been since then, Suta?
It was the MMIW event that we saw each other at, I think.
Yeah, 2022, yeah. May.
Wow. Yeah, it's 2023 now. It's been flying by. It's our busiest time right now, trying to get all the field work done, trying to get everything done outside before winter hits Montana is pretty serious, fast-paced business, especially if your job has anything to do with outside. I don't know. It's been flying by. Wrapped up some looking for a mink and otter, mm-hmm. and found some on the usual creek, and then also checked out the Sweetgrass Hills and found some mining contamination evidence there.
Ooh.
And yeah, that's a place I grew up. I don't know if we've talked since then or had a podcast, but it's a place I've been camping at since I was born. And my grandpa has used the buttes there to do fasting for like 13 years. And he's helped a bunch of guys go out there and start their fasting journeys as well. My dad, my stepdad use the other buttes. And so I've just been always down at this one campground and just swimming and painting myself with the mud in this creek. I went back earlier this summer. I took a short hike there, and then I went back, and it wasn't as bad as it was a couple weeks ago, but I saw some golden water, and I thought that that was a little different than what I had seen in my, you know, 38 years of memory. Mm-hmm. Then I went back. We had a rainy day, and when you have a rainy day, the dogs can't smell the scat as awesomely as they can on a fresh morning. The rain washes out the scat. And so we took a break that day. And then I drove over to the hills, my favorite place. And I looked at the creek again, and the creek was dry, and the whole riparian area was black and dead. And it looked like a huge flood of black sediment had gone through and then choked off life. And I told Michelle, the biologist, I'm like, looks like a huge flood. Everything's dead. She's like, it looks poisoned. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. And then, so I'm a water resource specialist, and I did enough classes in forestry and ecology and in the sciences that my emphasis, it's like a little bit less than a double major, it's an emphasis, is in mining contamination cleanup. It looks pretty classic, acid mine drainage, the orange water, you know, we saw that big news story about the Kingman mine in Arizona when we just first moved to Arizona. So I was a little disappointed about that. There was not much life in the stream, in terms of like abundantly seeing and hearing it. But if you eyeball down at the ground, we saw beaver tracks, mink tracks, or maybe muskrat and raccoon tracks. There was some frogs living in the water. The one that was in the water, I don't know if it was because it was a cold morning, but it looked like a little thin. I don't know if you can imagine a skinny frog, but
yes,
it looked emaciated and a little underweight for this time of year. You know, you want everything to be fat and happy at this time of year. And so we did find one on the land later on that looked a little bit healthier, but there were no minnows that I saw living in the water. Mm. And usually that's what mink and muskrat are living on, is those little tiny minnows. But then, you know, I got major validation. We talk about how do we sustain our energy for doing all this like dreary, drab, like not good news work. And, you know, I push through it. You like think about a bison walking in the snow, and they are built, especially built, that snow up to their shoulders is not a problem. And if the snow is over their shoulders, then they use their head and their horns to scrape in either direction to get that out of their way. And then they walk in formation so that the people behind them have an easier way. And so that's my metaphor for hard work, is that, you know, in some way I'm built for this, and I have faith and hope, and I don't underestimate my ability to do anything that's been served to me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think I can get through anything I'm handed. That's my sustainability. I don't know.
Wow, that's pretty hardcore.
I don't know if that's like, yeah, I don't know if that's quite sustainable, but
I mean, it sounds really hardcore.
How are we supposed to look at it? Like, I'm scared of what my life faces. I don't know what to do. And like, just, you know, there's going to be good things and there's going to be bad things. And either way, I'll get through them, or I won't. And if I don't, then I'm happy with what's been lived so far. That's also hardcore. Huh?
And that's a wrap for episode 103. Hardcore Sutta.
But I am thinking that you won't get through it. I don't ever think that I can't get through it. It's other people around me who say, wow, that's a lot. Or, wow, how are you doing that? Or, wow, that's crazy. Or, you know, I think everything before it's done is crazy. And even my CWD dog project was once labeled as like a trendy or boutique project. And I got major validation yesterday. I got an email from somebody, and I apologize if I didn't recognize your name. And I went through the whole committee and I didn't recognize anybody's name. So I apologize if I briefly met you and then we had such a beautiful, impactful conversation, because I'm a social butterfly and I speed conversate at conferences so that I can meet and hear about as many people's work as possible. And that's what I did at this Denver CWD conference. And so maybe from there, somebody heard me talking about my contaminants and layers and how it's something in the environment and in the water that's making our animals sick and then eventually us sick. Somebody heard me, somebody who doesn't think I'm crazy or that it's like just a trendy thing to do. It's very serious, and I'm really glad somebody's taking it serious. And then I just, right, like 15 minutes before this, now here, I'm going to get emotional. 15 minutes before this podcast, I listened to the audio clip of the news I shared, and it's the experts from the U of M warn CWD can be transmitted to humans.
Mm.
I was like, oh, this is so awesome. Like, somebody is taking this seriously, because I'm really scared for my people who are like dousing themselves and ingesting and eating through the land in copious amounts. We would be the first population in the Americas to get it if people do get it. And so somebody heard me, and then I'm like kind of stunned now, because the doctor at the University of Minnesota who put this working group together that I got invited to says that, and this article actually came out in June, and he said that they're putting together some of the nation's experts on the topic. And I think that's me.
It is you.
Yeah, that's me.
That's amazing. Congrats. You know, you kept going and going, and all these people who were giving you pushback, I'm not going to drop any names, but you know, people who are like not believing, now see the truth of what's happening with CWD, especially in your territory.
Yes, it's a very serious thing for Indigenous people. We don't only need the land and the water and the animals and the plants for cultural sustainability. We need that for our spiritual sustainability as well. Mm. And so, yeah, all of it needs to be clean. And yeah, we can't start our ceremonies with resources that are not at the quality to give us health and sustain that. So yeah, it's a huge thing for Indigenous people who are trying to live off the land and keep our cultures going. So I'm really excited.
You posted the video of that creek with the orange water.
That was it. Yeah.
It looked so not natural.
Yes. So that's one of the elements of the environment that I think is exacerbating.
Sounds kind of weird, but
sounds like the
a naughty word, but not really.
So one of the things in the environment that I think is increasing the susceptibility of animals getting the diseases of any kind, or even just like, so they call it chronic wasting disease, but it's a prion that's misfolded. That's a protein, and it's just misfolded because proteins are supposed to be these really nice, you know, those Christmas candies that are like those old school Christmas candies that are like taffied and hard, and they look rolled up in red, white, and green usually.
Yes.
The ribbon things. Yeah, that's what the prion is supposed to look like, all pretty and protein and folded really nice and neat. But when it gets chronic wasting disease, it just starts folding in all of these crazy different, like if a toddler folded your clothes for you, that's what it looks like. Yeah. And so I don't know, where was I? I was still stunned. Like, I just start trailing off. But
well, we were talking about the sustainability in this hard work, like your hard work with the CWD, like that's just one example of the hard work that you're doing. So how have you been sustaining yourself up until this point to keep going?
The winter time is really like a good time for me because things really slow down and I'm able to do our work schedule on my schedule, and I'm really productive and I get a lot done in terms of like story making and story sharing and then map placemaking and all of the other stuff I'm working on. So I really like winter time and when things slow down and those extended periods of darkness. Cause I like turning on some good music, making tea, and sitting by the lamp and doing something, you know, beadwork or working on my paper or crafting out. It takes a lot of effort to put into putting together like the Blackfoot Barbie or the Blackfoot placemat stories. Cause I do a lot of research and then I find the images to go with those. And then I piece together the stories, which are usually sometimes like 7 different stories that I have to combine down into less than 1 minute so that those of us who have a goldfish brain can stay. What was I saying? Just kidding.
I was like, no.
So we can stay entertained.
I love that like you describe it like winter as a positive time to decompress and move slow and stuff like that to sustain yourself during this work, because I find myself kind of slowing down as well, but doing this work is really hard. People don't know. We are advocating for a lot of really dark and heavy things, especially with MMIW. I find myself getting overwhelmed. Like even when we were in Seattle, thank goodness we had that day to ourselves to go and just enjoy the land and the water and explore and be like little girls having a really fun time, because we had this really heavy event after where everyone's describing what they're advocating for and all their organizations. And it was really tough to hear like over and over each organization go through why they're doing the work, what led them to do the work. And it was all really heavy, traumatic stuff. And I got a little bit overwhelmed and I had to go sit outside for a second because I just had this amazing day. And then it was just heavy, heavy, heavy. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I'm going to that weird place again. I better go just sit by myself under a tree for a little bit. And I had to. And that's kind of like what I have to do, is kind of step away and be alone. That's how I bounce back from really tough like meetings or even a tough day. Like when I'm in the moment, I need to step away for sometimes a good 30 minutes and just be alone by a tree or outside, just so mm-hmm. I can like see the sky and remember that it's not all super heavy. There's still really good things going on. My life is super amazing. I just need to take a moment to process that, because it was a really heavy event that we went to, but it was also super fun. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's a weird mix of what we do.
Yeah, we just became part of the grantees of Share Funders in Washington, the state of Washington. And we got to meet other grantees this past weekend, and they are working in amazing areas like cancer advocation. And she helped me like immediately. She told me the doctor I need to see in the city for what the cancer I'm dealing with. And then the other, yeah, there was another cancer advocacy group there as well, mm-hmm. who pretty much both of those people like define why there is a need for cultural humility, because they're both African-American people, organizations who were failed by the medical system multiple times, and then therefore created these organizations to help combat being left behind in healthcare systems, mm-hmm. and then losing your life, or having even healthcare be a dangerous place for us to be, right. as people of color, because we could die faster going to the doctor, being misdiagnosed, being over medicated, all of these kinds of, or being under medicated, being misdiagnosed, or being just left in the hallway, which is what happened to that one Indigenous fellow and that one Native lady over in the Eastern territories of Canada. But yeah, they define cultural humility, and it is heavy to hear their stories. But yeah, and I forgot what that was first like for me as well, because this is not my first like rodeo in the justice crowd. I've been around these groups a lot, and then they all come from like these really hard stories, and they're warriors for a reason, you know, then, mm-hmm. and they're helping these other people in our society through. And then I think what my coping mechanism there is, I focus on the person. I try to, you know, it's not disrespect. It's kind of like my characteristics and behavior around funerals is I don't like to see the body. And so I will not zone out of that part of the story, but I hear it. And then I try to like let it glow. Like I literally think of like clouds, mm-hmm. floating by, or I think of like water beating off of a duck when it comes and it pops up off of the out of the lake, like real physical sliding off type things,
right?
And that helps, like, you know, I don't know if I've been doing that. It's like a knee-jerk reaction now. It's in a self-preservation mechanism as well. And so and then I'm listening, I kind of start building up their success part of it, their strategy part of it. And I think in the old days, I wouldn't have been like first wife or like wife material, because I'm really fascinated and energized by strategies. And I really love hearing like how people did what and how they got through little tiny, you know, the minutiae of the action. So
yeah.
So I have different, I'm a weirdo. I focus in on different parts of the story, and it is hard if you like think about the trauma that puts us in a position to start helping our fellow sisters.
I just saw a whole system that was just broken and crushing everybody, and I was like, whoa, I gotta stop focusing on that, because it was getting pretty glum for me in that environment. Even though it was beautiful, it was such amazing people, but I just thought, look at how many times the system has failed all of us here. So I really had to like retract and be like, okay, that's a really negative like space to go into, but we're all here still working. We're all here having mm-hmm. a fabulous time doing the work, as hard as it is, right. which is what helped me bounce back.
And that system is so outdated, and we just all just are scripted into it to not question it. Or, but you know, part of the group that I'm in is it's the Center for Research and Policy. And so once again, in my life, I find myself in a really sweet spot where I get to make policy, advocate for like different elements of policy. I made Montana State policy and regulations on body work when I was a massage therapist.
That's cool.
So that there wouldn't be predators in the work, because there was a bunch of men who were claiming to be body workers, but women were leaving the building raped. So me and some of the other older massage therapists started driving to Helena for these series of meetings, and they implemented like the Montana State licensure program for body workers.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So I'm in that spot again, but this time it's something scarier. And it's like, and the, it says when the disease spills over into other species, including humans and other non-cervids. And it's already into beavers in Alberta and wild boars spreading across Alberta. And so if it's in a boar, we have to remember that anything pigs can get, we can get. That's why bovine flu was so detrimental. And then if you listen to that audio article that I shared with the little laboratory measuring the samples in there, it's just, there is, it could be that, that could be detrimental. I like a meeting that I had with the American, I think it's American Railway Trails Project, that they want to use some of the Blackfoot Place map stories on that trail system there. I had to tell them, you know, I don't know. Well, I just thinking of them just distracted me because it's been on my mind a lot. And you know how you have conversations with people and something like one sentence tends to ding around in your head, or mm-hmm. you ruminate and worry on it or something. I don't know what I'm doing, but sorry, I just got completely distracted from what I was saying, because there's a really important point that that American Railway Trails lady brought up. And you know, she's a journalist, and we were talking about narrative, and I've been on a big kick since, you know, before 2015, when we started this organization, about narrative, the words we use, how we describe things, how Indigenous people are described. She said, you know, there's a lot of controversy around, you know, how traumatic that information is. I think that was one of the words she used, paraphrasing this. What time is a good time? Or is it okay for other American children to learn about, you know, injustices to Indigenous people and stuff like that? Hmm. Sorry for this distraction and this tangent, but it's related, and it's one of our podcast topics. And I told her if our children were young enough or old enough to be taken and haircut, you know, bathed in lye and beaten, then their children are old enough to learn about it at the same age. They like that. And I think there's a meme going around like that too, right? And it's that's anything we subject children to, other children are old enough to learn about it.
Totally. I agree.
And if it's not okay to subject children to it, then where do we go from there?
Mm-hmm. Anyway, stuff.
Yes, I know. So I was just totally distracted from the acid mine drainage, what's in our environment, how things are getting sick, all these things. But to say I stay sustainable by keeping attached to my culture. There's a whole magical, you know, it's a hard to find a word for it, but it's magical. It's other next dimension, different energy. It's a different world when you take into consideration all the beings from the water to the stars and the mountains. Just the nature of my job, I can really easily get lost in like this. Other cultures would be like, that's a fantasy world. And I could have elders be like, what, she's too lost into this cultural, spiritual world. I don't know, but it preserves me a lot. I think being able to check out into something that you love. And so if you love old stories, or you have a hobby or something like that, you need to be able to check out and do something completely different that fires different parts of your brain.
Totally. I agree. I use rock and roll as my mm-hmm. escape, and just going on little adventures, side quests, I call them, in my life, of just exploration, fun, really, really fun things that I enjoy doing. Like when we got back from Seattle, I went to the Sphere. That was a really fun, explorative, like something I've never seen before. And then this weekend, I'm going to go to Phoenix to go to a punk rock and roll show. Like that's how exciting. I stay grounded. And I have to practice these things to remind myself that life is still super duper fun. And I have access to all of these great artists passing through the land, intermingling with everybody else who's on their passion grind. It's just how I sustain, because there was a couple times where I felt a little bit too flatlined, like I wasn't doing enough fun, getting too involved into the work, maybe slipping into a bit of a depressive episode. And it's like, I have to snap myself out of that. And I see I reflect actually on my younger self going way too hard in the work and not really enjoying myself properly in between the breaks. And I worry about young people who are doing the work at the front lines. Are they taking enough time to take care of themselves or stand in their joy for long periods of time? Or are they just really sacrificing themselves for the frontline mm-hmm. work? Because it can manifest, like we've seen, into something physical, something, I don't know, a sickness that you can actually develop.
Yeah.
Too many people that we know have cancer because of the work, I think.
Yeah, disease manifests illness in your body, and we hold things that we can't transfer.
Right.
Off.
So I really make a moment to like expel all of it out of me. And if it have to be in a really loud room with loud music and everybody's got that same energy of just letting go of whatever frustrations or whatever they've been through that past week, you know, like we're all in the same room, kind of expelling all that energy in like a big, loud, heavy rock show or metal or punk, whatever it is.
I'm part of that crew too, because I do feel a certain weight lifted off when that, you know, crunchy guitar goes through my body, like that, and the bass, like you feel the bass in the bottom of your belly, like, and so that like brings up Masaru Emoto's research. And Masaru Emoto is a Japanese water researcher, and he found that crystals can be formed in different patterns when subjected to different words and music. And so, of course, this colonial music Bach or Bach number one or something like that is played, and it creates a beautiful, like really pretty lit crystal. And it's like, yeah, it's true. There's lots of evidence on playing baby's classical music and how that expands and makes brain neurons fire. But then it came to the heavy metal crystal, and they really dogged on it. And I'm like, wow, these are a bunch of people who think words matter. And I'm like, and then they were just dogging on the heavy metal water crystal, which wasn't dark in color compared to the harmful words of things that are happening and that you hear in the mainstream news every single day, how harmful those words are. The heavy metal snowflake or the crystal was globular, just no formation at all, just like a big puddle of this like blah
and release.
Exactly. In my interpretation of that, looking at all of the other formation and lighting of the other crystals, and I don't know if he spoke about his lighting that he used in his laboratory experiments, but the lighting had differences between harmful words and good words, and the heavy metal flake was the same color as the good words. And so in my interpretation of that work is that heavy metal clears you and resets you. It's like a reset button. So there must be a frequency that all of us can go to, depending on who we are and what we naturally vibrate at, that we go to and we reset, right? And so that's you found your reset button. And I don't think a lot of people do in their life.
I found it young.
Or they do and they like repress it, you know?
Right.
Because we live in a society where people come from families that like, if you don't be a doctor, or if you don't be a lawyer, or if you don't talk like us or dress like us, you know, it goes down from there, whatever hierarchy of the socioeconomic system you're living in.
Yeah. Where else can you go and stand with a crowd of people who are there for the same reason and shout at the top of your lungs for an hour of total joy? You know, like we're not shouting because we're angry. We're not shouting because we're trying to get a message. We're just literally making noises with our bodies because we're excited and happy. Like mm-hmm. that's a huge part of what I think I experience when I go into these big, crazy crowds. And I'm kind of looking forward to this one on Sunday. And then I thought, because I went to this one show at the end of September. Oh my gosh, it's almost a month now. And it was 4 hours long and it was all heavy metal. And I was so tired. And I thought, I am really feeling my age. What am I going to do in my 60s when I'm like trying to get this, you know, all these emotions and feelings out of my body, like how I normally do at metal shows? Am I going to be that old lady standing there still kind of like, you know, got the horns up and shouting with my little senior voice?
They've got gray hair and they're kind of frail and they're like, I've been motherfucking rocking since the 60s.
Right? Am I going to be that lady? I've been here since the 90s. I've been going strong. I've been hardcore to the soul. since the 90s. And I thought, well, I'll just have to be that tired old lady at the heavy metal show one day.
Yeah, I know. I can't wait to take Owen into a show. It's going to be
me
fun.
Too.
He likes heavy metal and he likes rock and roll and he likes a heavy metal that I'm not a fan of. It's like man heavy metal. It's like
surprise.
It's very masculine heavy metal.
He sounds like he's a very mask boy and he's attracted to like what's it called? Hardcore. And like I'm like a doom dark moody metal.
Exactly.
You know?
And I'm like the lovey romantic girl synth pop metal. Like there's gotta be some melodic moments and
there's gotta be a festival that has all three that we can go to. Eventually. Right. Well, I hope whoever is listening and whoever is doing the work is taking the time to rid themselves of that heaviness wherever you're, whatever it is that you may do. You know, some people bead for hours. That's their meditative practice. I'm going to go try and be a hardcore kid still at this show, even though I'm approaching my mid 40s, but I'm not the only one, which gives me a little bit of relief. And hopefully other people are finding, maybe through dance, you know, a lot of people like to go to the club and just dance it out. Dance
I
it out
that.
Hard.
I haven't done that since Phoenix. I want that. So yeah, do something for yourself, love yourself. And if you're doing something that you need a bigger platform on, send us an email and come be our guest. If you're working for women or culture or the health of your community in some way, man or woman, they or them, it doesn't matter. We want to hear all of the good news that's happening. And that's also how we sustain ourselves, is as we've talked about it before. We got sick and tired of sharing the sick and tiredness, and we're like, there's got to be good stories and spins on these things. And so that's what we do, is we try to end with something happy and the good news.
Thanks for listening to the Ivy Podcast. We are Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit based in Montana and Arizona. You can follow us on Facebook at Indigenous Vision and on Instagram, Indigenous Vision Media. If you happen to miss our cultural humility training for October 2023, don't worry, we've got another one coming up this January 2024. I have shared the details and the link for you to sign up and learn more in the show notes for this episode. Take care, enjoy your day, and thank you so much for listening to the Indigenous Vision Podcast.